Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.
What up, what up, what up? You are listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio Channel 1. It is I, your wonderful host, Jennifer DeVoe, and soon we'll be joined by Dave Navarro. Sorry, hashtag the other Dave Navarro, because we have to say that. We are here with our wonderful guests for a great horror movie. Today, Shelley Martinez and David, who is the awesome director, and we're going to talk more about this project. We are based here in Sherman Oaks, California, having a beautiful sunny day. It's gorgeous. The traffic is, well, always crappy because it's Los Angeles, but that's neither here nor
that's
there.
True.
But I feel like I'm in a horror movie right now because no eyelashes and a zit. I always gotta love that. Perfect day to have horror movie people on the air. It's awesome. I love it. Anyway, so let's talk to our wonderful people here. Why don't you introduce yourselves and tell us about what's going on with your projects?
I'm David Scheinbaum. I'm the writer and the producer and the director, one of the producers of a new horror film called Middle of the Night that actually started shooting about 4 years ago, and I wrote this script that pretty much pays homage to the early 80s. There was really four or five early 80s slasher type of horror films that made an impact on the motion picture industry that really became iconic franchises, which were, I think the first one really, you know, was, I think, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, that was, what, 74?
Well, they made it.
1974?
There was a long stretch of time before they actually made a sequel, I think.
Oh, there was. It was 1980, 81 when the second one came out.
Yeah,
something like
and
that.
They did a, I'm not sure what, if it was a third, but they did a reboot, and then, you know, they did a 3D one. They've turned it into several, I'm not sure.
There was like five or six of them, and
yeah,
then they did
least.
Started doing the remakes.
And then, but, you know, Halloween was really the first franchise that became, I think it became eight films or something.
I think there's eight of them now, yeah.
And then they did a Halloween Resurrection, they did a H2O, they did
Jason versus Freddy,
you know, Rob
or Freddy versus Jason.
Well, John Carpenter just reshot a new version of his newest John Carpenter's Halloween, which is getting ready.
Ooh, I'm excited to
hear about it, but you're going to see the director that made his original $1 million, I believe, I think he made something prior to that, but
that's great.
And to see that. Well, it's going to be incredible to see, but the growth of a director too.
And plus the Rob Zombie versions.
Well, you know, it's his.
I mean, it's somebody else, but it's like the same. It's like another take on the franchise.
Pretty much, but it'll be interesting to see if he takes it. You know, because when Gus Van Sant redid the remake of Psycho, he did it by frame, and really, it was interesting to see why he did that. Because to some people, it seemed like it would serve no purpose. Why would you go recreate a masterpiece and just colorize it? Like, it didn't make any sense. But to some people, they liked it. It varies on, you know, the audience that you're playing for. So, to me, I wouldn't touch it. I don't know if I'd go take a Hitchcock film like Vertigo and colorize it and remake it. I mean, it would be a really... I mean, of course I would. If
the
someone
birds.
Said, here's $10 million and go remake the Hitchcock
the
film,
birds.
Of course I'd do it. But
like, remake The Birds.
It's kind of like going to take, like, you know, a film like The Godfather and remaking it. You just can't do that. And there's certain types of films that you would really... I mean, Francis Ford Coppola probably would never let that happen. Even if somebody got the rights to do it, he'd probably storm the set. There's no way you're going to remake The Godfather. Are you kidding me?
Probably.
Same with Rocky. There's just certain types of films that you just cannot, and they're remaking anything they can get. Their
Total Recall, Fright Night, all kinds of movies they're doing.
Some types of films, like, you know, King Kong, sort of needs to be rebooted every 20 years because it has that, you know, test of time. It's always
Godzilla,
gonna do well.
Even,
and you have to really introduce it to a younger audience. Same with, you know, Beauty and the Beast,
Godzilla.
They can do it with certain types of films, but you look at the five, you know, going back to those popular films of the early 80s, it was you know, Texas Chainsaw really had was a franchise. Then Halloween became this franchise. Friday the 13th made like 8 different films.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street did the same thing. So it's really the middle of night really does pay homage to those in particular films.
That's gonna be great.
When you're watching the film, it has those parallels. You're watching and you're like, God, this feels like it's a scene out of Friday the 13th because it has that parallel. And then it actually switches into a different
That's
film.
That's really going to make me want to go watch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's going to really entice the older audience because you're going to be able to take it. You're going to see this is familiar. And that's why there's such a big payoff in the last 15 minutes because you have an orchestrated ending of Halloween, Friday the 13th, and Hell Night, and all in the same 15 minutes with an orchestrated, because when you saw John Carpenter's, it was one note. It was in 1979, and it was that one note that just stuck in your head, and it freaked you out.
Oh, yeah.
One note on a piano, but think about it now.
Oh, God, yeah.
Decades later, you have, like,
it just John chills
Williams.
Up my spine.
That's how good Melissa's score is. She did the score for the film, which it took me 3 or 4 different composers to finally get the score done right.
Really?
Yeah, and it's compelling. And,
wow.
And, oh, my God, she's brilliant. And it really does. I mean, when you watch this film in a theater when everything's Yeah, I mean, it's really this close to being finished. I'm waiting. We're waiting for the final sound design cut.
Let me ask you this. What was the biggest, one of the biggest reasons, or what were the reasons for why it has taken 4 years to realize your masterpiece?
Well, first of all, it wasn't made for anything. So when we got to post-production, we were like, okay, we have $75,000 worth of post-production. How do we... What do we do with this?
So
we did the best we could with the money we had. And we did have money, but it's not 75. That's a lot of money.
That is kind of a big, yeah.
That's an estimated post-production cost of what it was going to cost to edit the film, score the film, colorize it, do everything that we need to do to get it sellable.
Right.
Because it's not this is not a huge studio film. It was made on a very restricted budget, enough to feed people, enough to get the equipment, the location, and the little things that you really need just to get it made.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's a tough way to make a film. It's guerrilla filmmaking. Show up,
which is what we want to do.
Well, it's not a healthy way to make a film. Because
not necessarily.
Wrong, you're never going to make a film ever again because you have a good script, you know, and people are trusting you, and they're working. You know, a lot of people are working for free.
Blair Witch Project. I'm just saying because that was like so low budget, and look what happened.
Well,
they made a lot of money.
Well, we had to stretch it out because we filmed part of it. We filmed for 15 nights, and all of a sudden the film it's only 70 minutes. Then we have to cut a scene, and then. For some strange reason, a really good scene mysteriously disappeared when
we were
in between hiring the right editor. Yeah, just some politically incorrect things just happen. And it's
crazy
just
stuff.
The crazy, it's just you don't even want to talk about it. And you just you try to just get through everything to get the film completed just so it looks good enough so you can sell it.
Okay.
And we're at that point right now where, you know, the editors, it's a common thing with editors. They're great at first, but after a while it becomes, well, you know, and the same thing I've heard with other people. People are working for less money, and or they're working for no money, and it's taken this long to, you know, do the film, and they get a little, you know, it's like, it's enough already, and the fact that I have to connect dots with people, sometimes we needed ADR work done. I had to have that done by a different person, and he had to... communicate with the editor, and I don't know. These guys do not CC. You ask them to CC the emails. They do not. Their communication skills are like
equivalent
to like.
So they're just sending stuff back and forth to each other, and not including you in on everything.
Well, I've had to have the ADR guy re-email files 3 separate times when he's already claimed to do it, and the editor's going, "Well, you know, he said he's doing this." So I'm in between people. It's like you're chasing your tail, and you're trying to get everything coordinated and. You don't have a post-production supervisor with a film like this.
Normally sounds frustrating.
It's very frustrating, and you're just going, and it's like almost like you're playing a pinball machine. It's just like the pinball, and you're
You
don't, and people can just slap you across the face. There's nothing you can do about it because they have your footage, and you're trying to get everything just perfect, and nothing's perfect. But, you know, after you get from this person to that person, you get this done, you get that done, then now you have the film almost completed. So we're really at the point where once we show this film to people, it's really going to need what you would do after you would wash a car. You need to polish it. You need to wax it. In order to make a film look really good, you need to colorize it.
You gotta refine it.
Yeah, you
tune
need
it
to
up a
put
little.
Some, you know, some visual effects. They need to... They're going to have to put a couple $1,000s, which is what a distributor, you know, if they're going to sell the film to 17 different, you know, it really depends on who our sales agent is because we're not trying to sell this, you know, to one you know, country. We want to sell to 17 different countries. So there's a lot of work that they have to actually do to the film. They actually, you know, they have to dub it for, you know.
Oh, yeah, they have to change it for
somebody actually has to sit down, and people don't know this, but somebody has to sit down and, because I wrote the script as is. It's the script. And then you have the shooting script. And then you go make the movie, and then actors are flubbing lines. They're changing lines. They're adding stuff. So somebody actually has to go watch the film and rewrite the screenplay the way it is in the film.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like almost like it's the published screenplay. Mm. So, and then they got to take that, and then every time an actor talks, they got to note who the actor is, what came out of their mouth, what time code it was, they can match the Japanese, the French. So it's an astronomical amount of work to be able to take it to the next place. But that's the whole, you know.
I guess you don't realize how much work goes into certain aspects.
Well, when you watch, you know, the end credits of a film and it's 20 minutes long, you wonder why.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Every single person, never even heard of the stuff, that's the stuff they're doing. And that's the stuff they don't get recognized for. And those are the people that should get recognized for all those little crazy things that you don't even see, that people are like, why is the film taking so long? Well, you know what? If I could peel back the giant big picture of it, you would be shocked at how I'm still alive. And that's the part of being a growing filmmaker, is those challenges, and being a growing producer and being a growing everything is those. And the better you can deal with them, the better your next film is going to be. Because you already know how to deal with all the problems, and they're not going to happen again. And that's going to make my next film a little bit better.
I think that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's why I go to the theater, because you go to the theater to be bad and be in a play as an actor. I'm bad in anything I go in, and that's why I got to go be an actor in a play again, so I can go be bad and feel like, you know, how do I get better? And same thing with a new play. I just wrote a new play. I'm going to go get some actors and take it into the theater and figure out why my writing's not. It needs to be better. Like, why am I not growing? And that's why I go to the theater.
But like, what's not syncing up here, or
it's the same thing with the filmmaker. And even with, you know, Rob Zombie, you just mentioned him. He was doing an interview with Howard Stern. I was listening to that, and you know, Howard Stern said you really have to go out and make 4 or 5 films before you actually really learn something. And he agreed in a certain way, and I do agree with that, because you do look at Quentin Tarantino.
Oh God!
Look at Reservoir Dogs, good movie.
Oh, great movie.
Pulp Fiction, really good movie.
Yeah.
Jackie Brown. People, you know, that's the thing with Tarantino. People are like, you know, Pulp or Reservoir Dogs really good, and Pulp Fiction, then Jackie Brown. Bother? Are you kidding me? Oops, sorry about that. And cell phone droppage here. But you look at Jackie Brown. I love Jackie Brown. That's his best film. That's such a great film. It's great writing. But then you look at the growth of his films and Kill Bill, and then you look at, you know, Inglourious Basterds. It's great, like the growth. And then Django Unchained, which is a little bloody, but the growth of his work is just, I mean,
all his movies are bloody.
Yeah,
God,
talking about.
So
what are you talking about?
It's the way he, you know, it's the way he, he's a visionary.
I love that man. He's probably one of my favorite directors ever.
You know, everyone loves him. He's got his following. Like, I heard Harvey Weinstein say that he'd fund his movie blind. He would literally give him a check for $100 million without even reading the script. Yeah, of course, because he knows he's going to deliver the goods.
Well, we are finally joined by my awesome co-host.
I don't know what you're talking about, okay?
Other Dave Navarro.
I was, you know, I was traveling back in time, and what can I say? You know, things happen.
We're not in a TARDIS. We are not in Bill and Ted's little phone booth.
It's always
right now.
An excellent adventure, though, Jenny.
You know what I'm saying?
Especially in L.A. traffic, for the love of God. Are you kidding me?
You poor man.
Oh, you have no idea. Well,
thing.
Anybody that drives understands that
I,
it's like insane out there.
I did drive for a while, and now I'm.
Well, whose fault
I'm
is
waiting
that?
To, my own.
There
shut
you
up.
Go. Exactly.
Shut up,
exactly.
Shut
my
up,
point
shut
exactly.
Up. Anywho.
Sorry, guys, for being late, but I just was having some issues. Can you believe that my neighbor threatened to kill me?
What?
Yeah. Just a couple of days ago, the guy went nuts. He actually threatened to kill me, a couple of other neighbors, and then he decided to have an hour and a half standoff with Glendale Police Department.
What?
Yeah, they actually had to
at
bring in
building?
At least no. In my it's across he's my neighbor across the street.
Oh,
and he owns
okay.
his own house and everything, but the guy went nuts, and so they brought in about like 5 or 10 units. They all broke into his house. Dragged him out, and he was laughing while he was being, like, you know, walked out. He was like, oh,
he
you
finally
guys
snapped.
Yeah, no, he was just like saying so many things. He threatened a police officer.
Did his wife leave him?
All.
Something.
No,
must
he
have
was just
happened.
A kid. He was just like he's just a whacked out kid, and he was like threatening the police.
He's
saying,
a freaking kid.
Yeah, he's only 21.
Backhand the bitch.
Seriously.
Backhand that little bitch.
I found out
show
his
him who's
bail,
boss, Dave.
I found out his bail was $250,000.
Good.
That was his bail.
Just sit there, the little bitch.
Of course, he's only going to be 10% of it. Sorry. But you know what are you going to do?
I just call it like it is. I have an 18-year-old son. I can go fuck himself. I just tell him right now, you just get the fuck over yourself.
It happens.
You are a pissy-ass little whiny bitch, and nobody cares. I said, sack up, Sally, because it's going to be
sack
a
up,
bumpy
Sally.
Ride. I told my child
I've
that.
Heard that before.
I told my
actually.
Son that when he was 9.
And what did he say to you?
He didn't give a shit.
There you go.
Exactly.
There goes the other answer.
I'm the mommy.
You're the mama.
You're the child.
Yep.
You do what I say.
That's right.
I pay the bills.
That's right.
Exactly. So you go over there, and you slap that little bitch, and you say... Excuse me? Who's your parents?
Who's your mommy?
I need to talk to somebody in charge around here, because you obviously aren't.
Well, let me just say that the guy was just whacked out. I just was like, you know what, dude? Whatever. And, you know, it is what it is. He got arrested, and, you know.
As a parent, though, seriously, if I was his parents, I would be embarrassed as fuck that was my child.
Oh, totally.
I'd be like, somebody'd be like, isn't that your kid on TV? If this was me and my son, anybody, oh my God, is that your kid?
Jen, this was in the middle of the day.
His father raised him.
This is in the, his father's dead, actually.
I know he is, but that's not the point. Oh, mine is too. My son's father's dead.
Yeah. No, this happened in the middle of the day, though. So every single neighbor around there, they all saw what happened.
He went cray cray.
Oh, he went nuts. He just like completely lost it. But yeah,
nutter in a fruit bar.
Yeah, totally. So I'm happy that happened. Hi, everybody. How you guys doing? I'm in my own little like Dave Navarro world over here. We have guests.
He's all upset because he got threatened to be killed by some. Punk
I don't like that.
Punk ass
I don't like that. I really don't.
And
you know why?
And you know why? Because you're like, what, 36?
Yeah.
Okay, you're 36.
Thanks a lot for telling people my age, but that's okay.
Shut the hell up. I'm 44. Who gives a fuck? I just told my age.
Okay.
You just got punk ass bitched by a goddamn 21-year-old. Slap him. I don't care. Next time you see him, just slap a hoe and boot a bitch. Seriously.
Trust me when I said it took
like
every ounce of me not
I'm
to.
I'm old enough to be your father. Not really, but.
Actually, kind of.
My son was 14.
Trust me, it took every single
so
ounce of my being not to.
I almost beat my son's ass when he told me he was 14 when he had a child. Got a girl pregnant when he was 13. I'm a bitch slapped him on that one. But anyway, children, what are you going to do? So we're here talking to our wonderful guests. I'm going to redirect the subject back to what we were talking about before.
We have Shelly and we have David.
Do you guys have kids?
No.
No.
Okay, you're lucky. So anyway, what's going on?
I don't either, thank
so
God.
We've been talking, I know, and you know.
I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, it would be tough for me because I have too much of a commitment with the films that it's, you know, if you're...
Your career, your stuff.
Well, a lot of my friends are parents, and as soon as you have kids, that's your life.
Your whole
life.
Damn world. Yeah, I know. I just got my world back. I just got my world back.
It's
so we've been
happy.
So David, you've been obviously talking about middle of the night.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit.
Sounds great
and,
so far.
Oh yeah, they actually brought me on board as one of the producers as well.
Frick yeah, hell yeah.
So I'm
that's
on board
I'm
with them as well.
Yeah, he's
and
doing,
now be a producer and get them some money.
You know, it's tough with
no, that's an executive producer's job actually.
Okay, well, then I'm
you know,
executive producer.
Tough. On a film like this, it's really tough with producers because everyone kind of does their share of what they can do because it's just the logistics of making this type of film. You can't just, you know, I'm the only one that's been from here from the beginning of, you know.
Inception.
Yeah, because it's taken me 4 years to make it, but, you know, the other producers may have worked on it for, you know, 3.5. He's going to probably only work on it for, you know, a certain amount of time.
Less than that.
Well, it's just, you know, everyone has a different contract too, so.
Right.
But it's really hard to kind of, you know, everyone does what they can do, when they can do it, with what they have with this type of film, because if it was a $5 million budget, then it would be a whole different story. Everybody's
right.
getting a weekly check, and everyone's not getting a weekly check.
Or they could just get one lump sum at the very start of their contract.
The first thing that, well,
whatever,
you know, I'm making that point because everybody works so hard, and they knew getting into it that as soon as we know who's going to distribute the film, that's the first thing people are getting is their check.
Oh, yeah.
Have you already started looking at distributors?
Like, well, we've been talking about it, but, you know, Brennan is the one who's, I think, well, I mean, we all know distributors, but the whole... anything with a film, at the end of the day, if you do not have a good distributor, your film will go probably
nowhere.
Not very far. Yeah.
And Brendan Dyson, actually, he's, I don't know if you've already talked about Brendan.
We just brought him up. Brendan's the executive producer. He also plays the killer.
And he's been in the industry for over 30 years, something like that.
Well, he's also LL Cool J stunt double. He's a stunt
on NCIS LA.
Oh, that's the other guy you were talking about.
Yep, correct.
That's his day job as stunt coordinator.
He's done so many. Like he's been.
He'll be on another.
But if you look at his resume, he's worked for James Cameron. He's worked for Michael Mann.
His brother Jeff Dyson pretty much wrote The Real Housewives of
but
Atlanta,
he's
right?
Very, really? Like, yeah, okay. He's multi-talented, though. If you look at all this, I mean, he's an actor, he's a stuntman, he's a writer, he's a producer.
Very versatile.
He's also stunt coordinator, and he's a stuntman. I mean, he's a really good stuntman. He just had to do something on NCIS where he took a shotgun blast in the chest, and he had very little padding, and he's wearing a CHP outfit. He had to take that fall on the cement.
Ow.
And he's, you know, shaved head. He's a big guy, but still falling backwards on the cement, and he was praying. I mean, that's
oh my god,
yeah, he prayed.
And he also got his leg broken or something like that.
That's serious commitment.
Well, I mean, that goes with the territory of being a stunt guy, you know.
Yeah,
so, Shelly, how you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm great. Where have you been?
Let's bring the wonderful Shelly Martinez.
You were out of town.
Yes.
I was out of town recently. Yeah, I was. I was in Vegas.
Oh, you were in Vegas.
Yes. Ooh, everyone loves Vegas. Yes. What were you doing in Vegas?
Well, my day job is I'm a wrestler. So
yes,
I was also
we love
wrestling.
So.
Sunday.
Well, it was Saturday.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But it was good because for me, I'm at a point with my wrestling career. It's just my job, so I'm just like, oh, okay, let's get it over with. But it is Vegas. And something I never got to do before is see the Hoover Dam, so I went to go see.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
I still haven't seen it myself. Where are you from originally?
California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
SoCal?
Yes.
Oh, nice. What part?
Ontario.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She actually saved a night of filming, which she makes one appearance in the film, and it is probably one of the most important scenes in the film, which sets up the film. And it's when all the cast members of this new TV show that's being filmed in this house meet the host of the show for the first time, and she stands up on the balcony and she does this beautiful speech, and it sets everything up. And that was the night where we were having a lot of complications finally getting the actress to commit to do the job, which was going to be Jennifer Irene Gonzalez, who is another actress who I've been talking to on the phone, and she was in Orange County.
Mm.
And it wouldn't work. Logistics thing. It just, we couldn't get her, and with the traffic, and I think with the amount of money that we had, we just couldn't make it happen. And I felt really bad because I really wanted Jennifer, but you know what? Somebody reached out to her. I had never met Shelly before. Before I knew it, Shelly is in a car coming up to the Hollywood Hills with a 2-page
nice.
Speech.
Damn.
You have to know your craft to be able to pull off this 2-page speech, because it's very direct in the what she's saying to them, and it's very specific, and it's setting up the film. And when she got up on that balcony with this script, I was freaking out. And she had the script a little bit to the left of her. You can kind of see it in frame. You can see it a little bit, but it actually looks like it's a part of the show. You can't really tell.
And
her body mic also looks like it's a part of the show, so you can't really tell.
Wow.
And she gave this speech from the balcony, and we had the Steadicam filming the actor's reactions, so the camera's moving around, especially Amanda, because she's got these really big, beautiful eyes, and she's looking straight up. It's a great moment in the film. And when she did the scene, I've never seen an actress so prepared and doing exactly what you're supposed to do as a working actress, to be able to get a script and to be rushed to the set in the heat of a moment of us being so desperate to get this scene shot.
Mm.
And when she got up on that balcony, when I watched the scene, it's brilliant.
So
she nailed it.
So, Shelly, tell us a little bit about what your character is, or who your character is, I should say.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate that. This is the first time I'm hearing this, and so, for me, it was one of those things where anyone listening out there that maybe is an actor, actress, or just any, entertainer, period. A long time ago, I was doing a shoot, and it was one of those things where it was a last-minute thing. I got this huge script. I was so scared because I felt like I was going to mess up. That was my whole, I'm going to mess up. So I was a little freaked out, and my friend was actually in the scene with me, and it was just me and him, and he came up to me, and I was getting my makeup done super early in the morning, and he goes, so all casual, so you just want to go through the lines until we just, like, get it? And I was like, okay. And he was my friend, so I trust him. I was like, okay. And I was so scared. And before I knew it, we were just going over the lines. And before I knew it, it felt like we were just playing with each other. And then before I knew it, I was able to add things, and it became fun, and I felt it. And so I took that and kind of tucked it in the back of my head. So when I got that script, I just kept going over and over. And one of my things is I love reality shows, which is a little, like, you know, competitive one.
Don't tell me your favorite is, like, Keeping Up with the Kardashians or something like that.
Anyways, so
see, this isn't television, so they can't see the expression
I
of the face you just gave me.
Competitive reality.
Like in her head, a hand just came out from the air from her head.
Hey, every single time I hear somebody say, I love reality shows and this, that, and the other, first thing that comes to mind is that.
But you weren't listening. I said competitive reality shows.
What are you talking about? The Kardashians are competitive.
She's talking about, like, no.
They compete against each other all the time.
She's talking about, like, total divas. Like WWE.
That's not competitive either.
That's better. Better.
I'm more talking, like, you know, like Survivor or, you know, different, like, shows that you need to compete. You know?
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. And one of the things I've always loved were the hosts. So to me, I felt like I scored because all I had to do is, like my friend Tommy said, shout out to Tommy, is just go over the lines over and over till I felt it and then just mimic what I love, which are these hosts. So that's what I did.
Well, apparently you did it really well. You did it really, really well because, you know,
but I
David's
think sometimes as actors, actresses, or any kind of entertainer, you know, you're out there, even people, you know, podcasters, whatever. You could put this pressure on yourself to, like, be perfect, and you don't want to mess up, and you want to make sure you get it right, and it can kind of take the fun out of it. And maybe today I had a Marty McFly myself, like, you were saying earlier. Marty McFly myself to hear Marty what I'm saying McFly right myself. Now and get in that moment, because when you were saying that, I dashed down there. Like, at the time, I didn't have a car. So I was like, as long as you guys can get me there, and they're like, yes, we can get you there. And what you're saying is that you fed everyone. Damn right you guys did. You had cheese. There was, you know, wine there.
Was there wine and
cheese?
Oh, yeah. Was there wine and cheese?
You know,
like,
where the hell was that?
So for me, I was like, oh my goodness, and it was in a beautiful home. So for me, I'm like, as an actress, that's what you're supposed to do. At the drop of a dime, if an opportunity comes, you go.
Of course.
And then to find out what it was, I was like, holy cow, like, hell yes. And then I go up into the hills, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful, yes. And then there's this awesome food, and everyone was
see,
so
they
nice.
Won't let me leave the camera. Every time I try
that's
to leave
shame.
Near the camera, they're like, where are you going? I'm like, well, okay, can I get, like, some wine and cheese? They're like, no, you can't.
That's
but,
a shame.
Yeah, no, I try to. I have to. That's the, you know, that's why I like working with a DP that's a little bit like, you know what? You know, I don't have to hold your hand through every single shot because I got to go talk to makeup. And that's a serious problem sometimes because when we were shooting, there's a scene, and we shot the end of the film on the first night. And when Erica walked in, I told her, I said, we have to do this because we have Steadicam, and I need to do these specific shots with the Steadicam. It can't be all held.
And Erica is who now?
Erica's the lead in the film. She plays Carrie.
Erica Othen.
She's the girl on the cover of the posters, the two different posters. But I told her, I said, get ready to cry. That's all you're doing tonight. I said, you're going to be crying all night and running. And they splattered blood all over Erica. And I was telling everybody... because we had to use the Steadicam mostly because there was only about 15 seconds of handheld shaky that I could use in a certain moment, or it would make the audience dizzy. So I really had a limited amount of time to get that. And it was Erica right before she ran into the bushes. Before that, it's an incredible shot. It's a behind of the Steadicam or the handheld just chasing her. And it's such a frantic moment, and the score is so heightened that if the audience literally isn't grabbing their chairs, I failed. But that's really the effect it should have on the audience because it's such an intense moment. And that's why I had him do that. And, you know, the DP at the time, he wanted me standing right next to him. And I kept saying, I have to stand at the other end of the backyard. Go in there and just follow Erica. And she already knows. She's crying. She already knows what to do. Just follow her. So they kept getting angry with me because I wasn't next to the camera. And it was really hard to kind of tell people that. And I'm like, just do what I ask you to do. Trust me. And they did it. But at the end of the film, when all that's happening, it's this Steadicam chase that turns right into this handheld incredible moment, and then it goes back right into the state of camp. And I knew exactly how I wanted to do it in this vision I had, but it was really hard to relate that. But
so speaking about your vision that you had, how did you come up with this idea for this movie exactly?
It was in Austin, Texas, when I was right after I shot American Interlude. It was really that choice of, you know what, you've been in the theater, or what do you want to do when you go back to LA? Do you want to be in the theater and keep being broke, or do you want to, you know, you just made this short. It's really your first short. I'd made a few others, but it was really just, you know, kind of a fail. It was the first time, you know, get a camera and get some food and get a couple actors and just go shoot some stuff and watch every mistake that you make. But American Interlude was that first one where I put it into a couple film festivals just to see, you know, the response. It got into one, but it kind of helped me, you know, get to that next level of actually sitting down and writing my first feature screenplay. And I was watching something that was on MTV or VH1. It was a reality TV show similar to The Real World, or was it The Surreal World? Or was
oh,
The
Surreal Life.
Surreal Life was awesome.
Yeah,
was,
I love that show.
Take a bunch of celebrities and put them all in a house together and see what happens.
Exactly. I think it was that show, but it was only about 16 minutes of it because it was so painful to watch because these people were so dysfunctional. But when you
watch, that's what made it funny.
But the thing is, when you watch Middle of the Night, the first 16 minutes is that show.
It's painful to watch.
Awesome. Yeah, it's painful to watch, like Brigitte Nielsen getting with Flavor Flav. Oh, right?
Dude, I loved it.
Season
I was
three
obsessed.
Of Surreal
I was
Life.
Obsessed.
You know what? I have to admit,
I have to admit,
I was obsessed too with the Surreal Life for a
feel
while.
Bad.
Too.
I wanted to be on it when
seasons.
They started to get like real, like D, like below D list. I was like, dude, I'm like a F. So maybe they'll
have
a chance,
but
right? Then they stopped doing the show.
Well, they,
we need to bring it back.
I know.
Resurgence.
Let's do it.
But our own version.
Let's do it.
At the beginning of the film,
Shelley and I are down.
Eric is standing in the bathroom, and the mother walks in. It's played by Lisa Nicole Lennox. I think it's Nicole Lennox. But she says, your father and I just watched an episode of Malibu Shore.
We want to
jump off a bridge because we couldn't take it. Are you kidding me? You want to go on one of these shows? And she's like, yes, please. Like, that's the argument between the mother and daughter. And
that's
here
awesome.
Comes. Yeah, that's how it gets set up. But it really is when they're coming up to the house. And I love the way Melissa scored it because as soon as they walk in the door, I think Caitlin is the first person to walk in the door.
Okay.
The titles of their names start popping up. And
oh, nice.
It's very Mean Streets. Like if you saw the movie Mean Streets,
okay.
When all the characters are being introduced, like their names pop up, and you know, Scorsese is really into the push the camera into the actor.
Oh yeah,
I didn't have the time to do all that and be, you know, get that camera moving. You want the camera to move. That's the, you know, the beauty of telling a story. You really want to, you know, keep that camera moving as much as you can, especially in a story like this when you're bringing people in and you're introducing characters. And you know, if you watch a movie like Jaws, you know, Spielberg is a really good example of how a film director is schooled, because you know there's a whole you can go on YouTube and watch like how they break down Spielberg's ways of shooting certain scenes and
really?
How he introduces an actor with the movement of the camera.
Really?
Where an actor like Robert Shaw is walking down a staircase and he's slowly pushing the camera into the actor, and as he's coming down to his mark, the camera stops, and then the camera actually waits and it pauses for the actor to take another step so the camera can push in more to really bolden up the introduction of the character for the first time. It's just it's a whole philosophy.
It's nice that they break it down like that, though.
Very much. Kubrick. It's very Orson Welles. It's just it's incredible how these. I watch these directors talk all the time, and it's like there's always a Rat Pack, the Sammy Davis Jr. Rat Pack, and the Frank Sinatra, and all those. They called those guys the Rat Pack, but there was the movie Rat Pack, which was Francis Ford Coppola, Brian De Palma, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, and Martin Scorsese. It was those five. They were all buddies. And they used to go to each other's sets and take scenes from De Palma's film. Scorsese would be cutting his scene. De Palma would go to a Taxi Driver set. They would work with Paul Schrader. And then if you watch Scarface, if you look behind the scenes, Al Pacino one night burned his hand on a gun. He had to go to the hospital they had to shoot 2 weeks with all just the character actors in the final scene where he's getting shot at, and all these guys are coming in. If you look who's behind the camera, it's Spielberg, it's Scorsese, it's all of his buddies. They had to shoot all this additional footage, so they're just blowing stuff up. They're shooting guys. They're, like, having, like, this fun time, and you're looking at, like, Oh my God! If you have to watch, it's a film called The Palma. It's the whole making of the documentary of the career of Brian De Palma. And when you see all of his buddies, it's like, whoa, look who's behind that camera. And it's the whole, you know, that like you go back to the Rat Pack. It's like these guys are like, you know, that's
legendary. It's pretty much the word that you're looking for.
Well, while I'm waiting to ask the next riveting questions to Shelley and David, I am going to let our buddy, the other Dave Navarro, tell us about the world and the news of today.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
All the way from ABC7.com, man in car shot to death in Norwalk. Investigation underway. This was death investigation is underway in Norwalk, where a man in a car was fatally shot. The shooting occurred around 3:45 a.m. Wednesday in the 16500 block of Horst Avenue. Sheriff's deputies received a report of shots fired and arrived on the scene. In U.S. news, U.S. colleges send warm welcome overseas amid dip in interest. Many U.S. colleges and universities seeing declining numbers of applications from overseas are trying to reassure potential international students they will be welcome on campus despite what they see in the news. Schools are ramping up marketing efforts geared toward foreign students to combat growing fears that President Donald Trump's stance on immigration reflects a United States that is becoming less welcoming to foreigners. In the world news, the latest, Tillerson says, Mexico, Canada ready to negotiate. The latest on Secretary of State Rex Tillerson remarks at the State Department, all time local, 11:10 a.m. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says both Mexico and Canada are ready to engage in a good faith effort to update their trade relationship with the U.S. In entertainment news, Brad Pitt talks Angelina Jolie divorce, giving up alcohol. Brad Pitt is opening up for the first time about his pending divorce from Angelina Jolie and his relationship with their children. Pitt tells GQ Style magazine that the recent chaos in his personal life was, quote, self-inflicted. Jolie filed for divorce from Pitt in September, days after it was reported that Pitt was abusive toward their 15-year-old son on a plane. Pitt was eventually cleared by authorities. In sports, the Western Conference Finals still continue as Houston Rockets meets up against the San Antonio Spurs, and Toronto meets against Cleveland. That is all for the news. These are the headlines in case you haven't heard them. And I also have a side note. By the way, most of those news were brought to you in part by the Associated Press and their staff members. I wanted to make a quick announcement real quick. There is a party going on tonight, Jenny.
And where is this, and how can I go?
Well, it's called the CEG Riviera 31 Lounge and Bar at 9 p.m. Wednesday today, May 3rd. It's located at 8555 Beverly Boulevard, 90048, hosted by Ralph Rickerman and Cody Walker. Networking and live music performances by Ralph Rickerman, international superstar from The Scorpions. I know you'd like that one. Members of the Rod Stewart Band and top 20 Billboard artists. Shira Sanchez. Great event for business people, artists, actors, investors, and musicians. So make sure you go ahead and check that out. Also, if you want that information, you could always contact Kati at area code 323-677-8288 and follow him on Instagram at The Real King Kati. Kati, you spell K-H-A-R-Y. That's for Instagram, and that's all I got for you, Jenny.
And that means free entrance for me into the...
Well, duh, we're doing this, so
okay,
yeah.
Good, because I'd have to hurt him. And, you know, because Jenny don't do anything for free.
Jenny don't play that.
But Jenny don't play that, and even if it ain't in cash value, you know what I'm saying, you got to give me in something else. Oh, I trade in burros, and cars, and clothing,
we're
and maybe
so
some shoes.
Gonna get sued right now.
Sued by fucking who? We're on LA Talk Radio, bitches. I say whatever I want.
We are on Jenny's Sam. Real Talk on the Block.
I keep it fucking real.
Damn right you do.
I'm gonna goddamn live on Skid fucking Row. I'm gonna goddamn do whatever the hell I fucking want to.
So, anyhow. Shelly, we're here with Shelly Martinez and David Sheinbaum of the horror movie Middle of the Night. Shelly.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to see
You know what?
This.
It's a really awesome movie. Really awesome movie. I enjoy it. I enjoyed parts of it that I've seen so far. And I want to ask you, you said that you're wrestling. What's the wrestling organization that you wrestle for? Or are you just floating around different organizations?
Oh, you know, I just float all over.
Who have you floated? Who have you floated to, or with, or
I
from?
Floated
or,
I floated here
something.
And there, you know.
So
I don't
besides,
like to talk about it
does
much.
does the letters W and another W and an E apply?
Yeah, I floated with them.
Really?
Yeah.
And who were How you was on it? There?
I was Ariel when they brought back ECW.
Wait! You were fucking Ariel.
Yes.
Oh my God!
That's why you look familiar. Yeah, I remember.
That's how I know you. Oh my God!
I do remember. I remember you as well. I remember Ariel.
I kept looking at your face, going, "Why is this bitch look familiar? I know her
because I'm the vampire."
Oh my fucking God! You are her.
Jesus Christ! I am her.
So, wow! I didn't even. I kept going. Why?
You got to put the. You
got to
put the connect the dots,
dude. I kept
That's
going.
All you
why
do.
Does this woman's look face look so freaking familiar? I know her from somewhere, but I don't know where. Have I seen her at a party? Was she a swing? I'm saying. Was she? I'm just. Have I seen her somewhere? I'm trying to figure out where this was.
So how did you? How did you enjoy your time there?
She was fucking. Oh my God!
How did you enjoy your time?
You were
there?
So awesome. I love you, by the way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it was really interesting. We probably don't have time to get into it, but
we'll bring you back. On
oh yeah, we're
episode.
Definitely gonna bring you back.
We don't care. We'll bring you both back. We'll talk some more about this stuff, and we don't.
No,
care.
But it was just one of those things where, long story short, that was my childhood dream to go to WWE.
You were awesome on there.
I did. Thank you.
The shit you used to do when you hung upside down like a goddamn bat.
I invented that.
Oh
by the
my
way.
God, she's a hand dude. Right. She would get up there and she would flip her legs. She'd flip up on the rope and she would fucking hang upside down like a goddamn bat.
Well, Jenny, one of the
things.
And she'd wear this makeup and this stuff, and I'd be like, oh my God, she looks so hot.
One of the things in WWE that they always go ahead and say is, like, make your character happen. She's putting on the fangs. She's putting on the freaking fangs.
You never know when you need them. See,
that's
why I always carry my fangs.
Oh my God, we're getting a picture taken of this.
That's awesome, guys. She put the fangs on.
With fang, and we're going to do a picture without fang.
I'm going to take them out because it makes me have a lisp.
We actually have two women in the film that are from WWE.
Are you shitting?
Yes.
Who else?
Katarina Leigh Waters. She's also...
Yeah.
In the
did
film.
She, who did she play?
She plays one of the detectives.
No, I mean, who did she play on WWE?
She was, she
they
actually was,
name.
She, her name was Katie Burchill.
Katie
Burchill, yes.
Oh my God, who else?
Who
this
else?
Is crazy.
Who else do you have?
The only two girls.
Oh, just them two.
Yeah,
but kind of to going to answer your question about how my time was there, long story short, yeah, I did live my childhood dream, but it was kind of messy how I got fired, and
Sorry.
It was one of those things where it was really
stupid.
Challenging to have life after wrestling, and especially I thought people were my friends, and just seeing that they weren't my real friends
anymore.
No,
a lot of people in the industry aren't, honey.
No,
I
know.
Found that out,
period.
So I know.
Like, just period, you know?
No, there's a lot of good people in the world.
No, there is.
Just,
there's good people.
You have to find them.
You just had to find them.
There's good
like,
people.
We're good people, but like that's...
Speak for yourself. I'm an asshole.
Yeah, I know. That's why I didn't date you.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
But with Katie, Lee Burchill, or Kat... She's actually the one that referred me to the movie. And, you know,
wow,
in the land of
great.
Fake and phonies in wrestling, because that's how I kind of put it. That's the land of fake and phonies. It's really cool that another woman actually didn't cockblock, you know, me from a gig. And
so you're the second WWE diva or star I've ever interviewed. Actually, female.
Oh, okay.
Female.
Who was the first?
I interviewed Natalya Neidhart.
Oh, okay.
I made her cry.
Oh, why?
It wasn't a mean crying. It was a nice crying.
She's like, why?
Her,
why would you do that? Why?
Because I told her my daughter named one of our ferrets after her. Oh. And that touched her and made her cry because she thought it was so incredible that a child would name their pet after her. We named one after China, and then the other one was Beth Phoenix. Phoenix after Beth Phoenix.
Again,
but,
point in case, yeah. Like you bring up China, that's how wrestling is, man.
That's sad.
Point in case,
I didn't
it's
like how
hard.
She went out.
Like, it's okay. life's hard period, right? And yeah. then entertainment is like super hard, especially when you have a job that's entertainment and you're traveling. So you're seeing the road more than your family. Yeah. That's like changes everything.
Yeah.
So when it's that part of you, that's it consumes that much of you.
Then when you're out of the limelight, then when you're out of the limelight, like China kind of got kicked out of the limelight. And
well, that situation was a little harsh.
At the end,
connected with her because the reason why I got fired was I stood up for myself to top male talent, and I was told you're not supposed to do that. So then they fired me.
I'd like to know who the top male talent was.
it's no secret. It was Dave Bautista.
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 right now.
That's interesting
you
bring
that
up because it's one of those things where throughout the years I felt healing from it and everything. But now it's like a open wound because here I am just driving around town and then there's Bautista and it's just been kind of weird for me lately.
Did you see that asshole recently? You must have.
Just around like, you know, or
because
on
he's
TV.
Doing the premiere.
So
the premiere stuff for Guardians of the Galaxy here in Hollywood recently. So you may have seen that.
Right. I've been seeing him on TV and it really makes me think like, dude, like imagine these people. For example, I know Robin Williams' daughter lives in my my neighborhood.
Oh. Zelda.
So that's sad. The market, our local market, when he passed away, had like all these pictures. And I was telling my sister, imagine like trying to like our grandma died and it really affected us. So I thought, imagine like if she's finally getting out of the house, you know, just going to go get a soda at the store and then boom, you're reminded.
Yeah.
And so and it's like it's kind of one of those things that just made me look at things differently. And now here I am years later and it's just like it's like because it traumatized me and I didn't realize that. I thought, you know, I got over it, blah, blah, blah. But it really, truly traumatized me, and I've been trying to understand myself, and like I've been just trying to talk about it because I noticed that's the best way for me to like figure out because I realized there's a lot of suppressed memories that happened while at the WWE that like when someone recently she's like, oh, don't you remember that time? I was like, what are you talking about? And then when she brought up the details, I was like, oh my gosh, I totally suppressed that.
Well, Jenny, crazy. You know what? It sounds like that's we're gonna have to have her back on the show to talk
a little bit more.
We're
gonna have them both back on the show.
Yeah, and real quick, I had just a couple more questions real quick. One, what are you doing now since, you know, you've done like you're doing wrestling, what else are you doing right now?
Well, I am kind of trying to quit wrestling. I have a couple more bookings, and I think I'm just going to quietly be done. I'm not going to do a whole, I retire. I'm just going to not do it. You know, if anyone says, hey, I'm just
going to
be
like,
I just don't care. Like, it's just not that big a deal to make an announcement. So I'm just going to kind of do my own thing. But one of the things, that's why it was interesting coming here for middle of the night, because something that I've always put kind of on the back burner, like I'd almost get there, but then I put it on the back burner for wrestling, is my love for horror. Like there's different things.
Nice.
Like my child,
tell me about it.
My childhood dream was to be in wrestling, and I got to be a freaking vampire. So it's like hell.
So you
got
half and
hell
half of
yeah.
there.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's my favorite thing.
Oh my gosh! Like when I saw Lost Boys when I was a little girl, that's when I was bit, and I became a vampire for life. You know? Well, I'm part pirate too, but you know,
I'm more vampire though.
So
it depends on my.
Right now you're looking at horror. One other question: where can our listeners find you?
Awesome. Well, I also have an exclusive fan site that there's a little bit of a fee.
I like it,
but it's just me being uncensored with my vlogs and behind the scenes or my photo shoots because I do photo shoots here in LA and stuff like that on a regular basis. And that's onlyfans.com/ Shelly from Kelly Shelly from Cali, like California. And the same thing with my Twitter and my Instagram, at Shelly from Cali. On Snapchat, Shelly from Cali, the number 4, because I messed up the first account and I deleted it, and it's like, you can't recover it. So I was like, oh, my favorite number's 4. I'll put 4 there.
Screw 4,
So yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I've just really been focusing on is my fan site. Because of my wrestling, I've gained some awesome fans that are very supportive.
I'm one of them. Massive fan of Ariel.
You know, it's really amazing to watch all of the, because I work with a lot of young women, and they have these followings. It's amazing to see how, like, they're
people love them
stars.
So much.
Well, they do it on their own. I mean, they build their own following from all the. They go find their own work, and they, you know, it's like it used to be.
Vampire.
You have to be a movie star.
And David, I wanted to just say you also are working on one more movie, which we're going to have him back again to talk about.
Yes.
It's
Midnight Fighter.
Midnight Fighter.
Okay, so we got two movies we're working on. We're going to have you guys back on a future episode.
Most definitely.
Thank you very much.
Very soon,
thank you, David Steinbaum, Shelly Martinez. Thank you both for being here.
Yeah, and we got other things to talk about afterwards. Yes. This has been...
what do we got next week?
The Wonderful World of Jenny's Real Talk in the Block. Next week, we've got Yella Boy.
All right!
Duke!
Woo!
Coming on at you. He was on the first episode.
I promise I won't be late next week.
He was on the first episode. You'll remember him and, and Danny from the first episode of Jenny's Real Talk in the Block. They're coming back.
Beautiful.
Artists from L.A. So we're going to have them on.
Oh, Danny's coming back.
Not Danny. She did her solo one already.
Gotcha.
He's doing his solo thing.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I do. He called us that day. Yes, I remember.
So we're going to have him coming in on May 10th.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, wonderful things to happen. All kinds of other great guests coming up here in the next few months, but we'll get to that later. You've been listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio Channel 1, and we're out of here. And we
Goodbye.
Will see you next Wednesday.
You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.